from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on this special Thanksgiving edition of Forum, we bring you two interviews from our archives. First, I'll be joined by the stars of the Discovery Channel show Mythbusters. Adam Savage and Jamie Heineman will talk with us about paddling a canoe made of duct tape and other hijinks, all in the name of science. Then at 10:30, Michael Pollan talks about the importance of cooking with the family and how processed foods disrupt our link to the natural world. That's coming up next on Forum. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Well, the Mythbusters are here with us in studio for this hour. Since they're both in San Francisco, surprising it's taken us so long to get them here, but they're busy guys. San Francisco-based hosts of the Discovery Channel show, which is now in its 10th season, both special effects experts who have served as guest editors of Popular Mechanics, and present a weekly popular documentary show based on holding myths, tall tales, urban legends, and holding them, I should say, up to science. They've appeared on David Letterman, Good Morning America, The Colbert Report, NPR's Morning Edition, but now have finally made it to the big time here as guests with us on Forum. Glad to have you guys. Like I say, it's taken long enough, and I'm delighted you're here.
I'm really sorry it's taken us this long. We only work, we shoot most of our stuff in our shop. It's about 5 minutes from here.
Yeah.
Well,
you might have been able to hear us blow stuff up.
I was going to say, were you blowing something up before you came here?
No, we were actually doing a wrap-up on whether boiled microwave water is actually dangerous to plants. Mm. We've had a little greenhouse experiment set up for a couple weeks.
Let's hold that, I guess. We want to keep people in suspense as to what the conclusion is. It must be a lot of fun what you do. I mean, some of it's really crazy, and I kept thinking, God, have they got Lloyd's of London, or who's doing the liability for these guys? But the truth of the matter is, you seem to really, well, find it exceedingly enjoyable.
Well, as far as the insurance, it's something that we've learned our way around over the years. We have a safety consultant that we go over every story with before we do them, and that person acts as a liaison between us and the insurance company. And you know, at this point, having done it for over 10 years, the insurance company has a certain level of trust in us.
Well, yeah, congratulations. I mean, to endure television for 10 seasons in itself is quite an achievement. And I kind of get knocked out by the backgrounds, the resumes you guys have. Now, you worked a lot in special effects and commercials and everything. I mean, Russian language, jack of all trades. I mean, working in television and film early on, in your case, Adam, I mean, it's just how broad and how diverse the range is of what you guys have done.
Well, I think that we're both people who've tried to investigate every interest that they had. You know, I, for one, always enjoyed jobs where I was actually learning something. And when I moved from New York to San Francisco, that was no exception. I started getting into the theater industry here, which was really vibrant in the early 90s. And that led to Jamie Heineman actually calling me and asking me to come work for him in commercial special effects. And I mean, every single career that I've had, whether it's assistant animator or projectionist in a movie theater or special effects, it's always been something different every day. And that's really the best part.
Well, it's the best part of doing a talk show, too. It's something different every day. But I was struck by an article I happened to see in Wired, which you guys probably saw. It was a physics professor by the name of Red Allain. And he said, are these guys really scientists? Can you really call them scientists? And he used an example of some dialogue between people where they said, well, you know, you can't do a thumbprint scanner in an iPhone because I saw in Mythbusters. And he said, well, you know, Mythbusters prove things, and the fact is maybe they don't prove it over and over again the way scientists do, but they are scientists. I mean, he was saying maybe you need more trials, but you're doing what human beings do, and almost all human beings, so his argument went, are scientific if they're curious and they want to find out answers.
Yeah, well, actually, that's a good point. And one of the things that we like to mention about us and whether we're scientists or not, we approach it as a way of just getting a job done. You know, we want to, if we want to figure something out or find an answer to something, you know, it makes sense to be methodical about it, to do a good job of that. And the fact is that that, in some sense, is science.
And he praised your having methods over results and said, you know, you realize science isn't absolute, which he said was also a definite positive.
Well, and we, alone among other shows, we have regularly gone back to results we've already concluded and re-experimented with them with new data and new protocols and come to different results. We are totally willing to throw out something we've concluded before if it turned out that our methodology wasn't right. We often say we don't stand by our results, but we really do want to stand by our methodologies. We want to conduct something robust, even if we're only doing it once.
You even got President Obama to go on with you. I mean, if people didn't see that show, it was all about the idea that you can cast enough sun rays onto onto a ship, for example, to actually have effect on it. First of all, I want to find out, how did you manage to land Obama?
Well, the Obama administration reached out to Jamie and I to come to the White House for a policy speech he gave about the STEM initiative a few years back, which we are always plugging to say it shouldn't be STEM, it should be STEAM, because arts should be part of that training curriculum.
And we should mention STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math, and let's definitely put the A into that. I like that.
Absolutely. And we were there, and he gave us a shout-out, which is talking about MythBusters as a prime example of a show that makes science fun and engaging for kids, something we never actually set out to intend to do with the show. And after we had gone there and met him, the White House asked us if we would like to try and work with them on an episode, and we came up with the Archimedes Death Ray. We went to the White House about a year later to film with the president, and it was wonderful. He was a total pro. We actually shot all of our sequences with him in 13 minutes flat.
Wow.
And then he was back to doing the important work.
And how'd you get all those young people out there with mirrors?
Well,
it was like a fleet, a battalion. Really.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were from Encinal High School in Alameda, where my wife is a science teacher. And she rallied them for us. And, you know, the thing was that that school is right near the coast there. So all we had to do was walk them from their classroom right out there. Although we did have to make a point, which was interesting. The White House required that we not do it during school times, lest there be any implication of you know.
MythBusters taking kids out of school. Yeah, right. So we had to shoot it on a Sunday.
Yeah. So,
they took kids out of church instead.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. How many mirrors were there?
500.
Yeah, 500.
And the kids were great. They had a tremendous amount of focus. They really did a great job.
And it was not hot enough for ignition. I mean, it was proven.
It was not. It's just too difficult to wrangle that many people. Although Jamie, who was on the boat in a proximity suit, said that the light was incredibly blinding and distracting. And certainly he could imagine 2,500 years ago, a ship meeting that type of brightness from the shore might absolutely turn around and head back in the other direction.
Yeah, speaking about Jamie in a suit, I happen to tell you guys, those swimming suits that you put on when you did the swimming through the syrup.
Oh, God.
I mean, that should be on a fashion plate, you know.
Yes. We learned a long time ago that our dignity and good television are mutually exclusive.
Yeah, well, the thing about the, you know, being on the ship and noticing the lights, it points out that a lot of times these urban legends start with, they may go someplace that's crazy eventually, that's totally, you know, not true or bustable, but somewhere at the beginning, usually there's some grain of truth. And we often only find that when we start to play around with these things. Like in that case, we were trying to set the boat on fire. That didn't work. But I noticed, well, maybe actually what started this myth was that, you know, maybe they actually tried to do this with, you know, flashing lights, but it wasn't to set the ship on fire. It was just to scare the invading hordes.
Was President Obama disappointed? I think he believed in the Archimedes myth, didn't he?
No, I don't think he was disappointed at all.
Well, it's good. You don't want to disappoint the president. We're talking with the two MythBusters who are here with us in studio, and I thought maybe we'd hear a little bit of your work. This is This is an episode some of you may remember. The Mythbusters tested whether someone could escape from a sinking car. I think this is the one episode that Adam Savage's mother will not see.
She's not allowed to watch it.
Not allowed to watch. So what happens is they push open the door in time before running out of air. These are the kinds of things you see in James Bond movies and all the like. Adam volunteered himself, high valor, or at least he was lucky one chosen to sit in the sinking car. And here's a clip that starts with the car sinking into a giant pool of water. There's a diver with an oxygen tank on standby in the back seat in case Adam needs air. And you can hear the narrator describing the scene before we hear Adam's voice from inside the car.
The car is sinking on its own. The 700-pound fake engine is taking it down nose first, exactly as it would in a real situation.
So the water's up to my butt now. All right. Okay, it's coming past my waist. Now I can start to see under the water. Oh my God, it's coming up under the windshield. Wow, I can feel the pressure. All right, I only have a couple more breaths here.
Adam's never this quiet. So what's going on down there? The water is leaking in from every open crevice in the car, and Adam is now fully under. He holds his breath, tugs on the door, pushes his whole weight against it, but nothing happens. Finally, he can't hold his breath any longer and signals for Jamie to pass in the regulator. When the pressure ultimately equalizes, he opens the door and swims to the surface.
Ah, a little primal scream there. And Jamie, you two work together and have a very good relationship. I hope you didn't have any hesitation about handing that over to him.
No, we work especially well under pressure in those kinds of situations. It's something we've done now hundreds and hundreds of times.
It's funny that we'll be in a situation like that. And even though we have very different working styles and very different methodologies and very different ways, we prefer to think through problems. Under high-pressure situations like that, our brains run on almost parallel tracks that we really understand nearly without speaking exactly what's necessary to do. And this really comes out when we actually have to work underwater in scuba gear. We find it really easy to do.
Well, in looking over some of the Mythbusters episodes, I was struck by – I found myself wondering about the budget for some of these things that you do. I mean, especially some of the big explosions. And even something like that, you know, you're taking a car and drowning it essentially.
Well, one of our strengths also is figuring out ways of doing things efficiently. A lot of times, like the best known one is when we had to blow up a full-sized airliner. And
we
went to a scrapyard where, you know, these things get recycled for their aluminum at some point when they've passed their sell-by date. So we just sped up that process a little bit with explosives. And, you know, I think it worked. Our researchers, which are an important part of our team, figured out that a long time ago that, you know, a lot of times we would have to buy the item and then, you know, do our thing to it and sell it back. And so we did that, and it ended up, I think, the doing that with the airliner cost us like $3,000 or something, you know. So we love finding ways like that to cut corners.
Where do the premises come from? I know, for example, there's some things like liquid oxygen that you just won't do. yet you just seem to proliferate with so many ideas.
It comes from all over the place. We get a lot of myths on Twitter through our Twitter feeds. I'm Don't Try This on Twitter. Jamie's Jamie No Tweet. we get emails. We get questions from fans and even people walk up on the street. At this point, the show's been on so long that the fans really have a great idea about what is testable and what would make a good show. So a fairly large number of the suggestions we get are reasonable and go on our list.
I want to go to another episode here. This was the sound of Adam Savage emerging. We just did that. This is the Mythbusters testing the local legend that three prisoners escaped from Alcatraz back in 1962 using a triangular raft made of raincoats.
The FBI files say the escapees were aiming for Angel Island, but the Mythbusters will test their own theory that they were smart enough to use the outgoing tide to carry them to the Marin Headlands.
Here I go, Jimmy.
Okay, we're off.
Three. Here we are.
We're escaping!
Adam, Jamie, and Will are paddling across the tide. If they've miscalculated, the current will sweep them under the Golden Gate Bridge and out to sea. The raft is getting weaker. Every 10 minutes, they have to add more air. And the tidal rip is getting rougher. It seemed impossible, but the Mythbusters are almost there. Paddling a raincoat raft more than 3 miles across a rushing tide, making landfall just east of the Golden Gate Bridge.
We made it!
And that hoopla feeling at the end of this, which often comes, but sometimes you guys are really putting yourselves at serious risk. I mean, some of these things that you've done are really, wow.
Well, I think that there's a perception that there's a serious risk because a lot of the stuff we do, people have significant phobias about, like being buried alive or sinking in a car full of water or paddling a barely floating boat across the bay at 2:30 in the morning. But we really strive to set up every one of our experiments so that pretty much anybody could do it. I mean, we're in reasonable shape, but we're not paragons of physical fitness. We don't want to conduct an experiment where we just barely get out of it. We have a vested interest in surviving. So we really, I think, set up quite safe experiments.
Yeah, it's a weird place to be in, though, because, you know, we are often messing around with dangerous things. It's sort of our stock and trade. So sooner or later, you figure your numbers up. And yet at the same time, you know, everything that we do, any close call that we have, all goes into this sort of library of understanding of what we can get away with and what we can't. And so we've become much, much safer over the years. So somehow there's those two kinds of ways of looking at it are balancing each other out. And we, you know, we're proud of the fact that, you know, neither us nor our crew have suffered any serious damage. You know, we've had a couple broken fingers from handling the safety equipment.
A few stitches here and there.
Yeah, and that's about it. So,
well, most stuntmen have a lot worse, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. Actually, when we've done real stuntman work, like jumping off buildings into airbags, that stuff, that taught me that I don't want to be a stuntman. That's incredible and difficult work that they do.
You become so identified, though, with explosions and, you know, dropping cars into water or going across water on a motorcycle or all kinds of things involving vehicles, you know, or explosions and everything. And yet, you know, when I went back and looked at some of the old Mythbusters things, like, well, there's that Shrek-inspired experiment with earwax. There's some things that have to do with human biology, including Son of a Gun, which was nicely described as genetic material. Can we talk about those? And where?
That was very fun. The Son of a Gun is a story in which it's a famous Civil War urban legend in which a soldier is shot through his testicle by a mini ball, a classic Civil War era round. And the same bullet then pierces the womb of a woman 50 feet away and supposedly impregnates her. And we actually conducted this experiment in just what Discovery felt was a family-friendly way, which was they were totally impressed by. But we were not allowed to say the word sperm during the entire experiment. We had to call it genetic legacy, I think, right?
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre, isn't it?
On Discovery Channel yet. Actually, there's an old urban legend about a woman. I think it's an urban legend, maybe true. I don't know how you would test this, but a woman in a bathtub and, you know, there was some of that genetic material in there and suddenly became pregnant. Similar kind of.
Interesting.
Yeah, and swimming pools, I've heard of
that. Yeah. Well, I mean, the spermatozoa stay alive and they have their own motility and there it goes and so forth. There's also a lot of, you know, I started thinking about biology and some of the experiments. There are all these stories about somebody sleeping and putting their finger in water. And
we tried that.
Did you try that?
Yeah, we tried that at the San Francisco Sleep Center.
And what did you come up with?
Well, it didn't work.
It totally didn't work. It was actually we tried it with Jamie first, and it's really funny because Jamie doesn't sleep, it turns out. He just lies there, and it looks like he's sleeping, and the charts all look like he's sleeping, and his EEG looks like he's sleeping. And then the moment a single sound comes, he opens his eyes, and he's ready to go.
What about methane and flatulence? I mean, there's lots of urban legends about that.
We've
did a whole episode on flatulence.
Yes, yeah, and there was one part of that that actually did that ever air?
It did. It did air as part of a compendium special. We again, this is another episode where we filmed the entire episode. We weren't allowed to say the word fart. We weren't even allowed to say my second favorite, which was Chanel number 2. But yeah, we finished that with me lighting a flatus on fire. which is a classic frat boy trick, but hadn't been caught on film and never been shown on television.
On high-speed camera.
On high-speed camera, no less. And just at that time, I think this is 2004, Discovery felt too nervous to put it on TV. So it sat on the in the archives for years. I think it only aired about 3 or 4 years ago.
Thought we'd hear one more cut from a Mythbusters show. And this is when Adam and Jamie made a canoe out of duct tape. That's you heard that, right? They actually made a canoe out of duct tape, and then they paddled it out to sea. Let's hear the clip.
Remember, we're sitting there in a canoe made of duct tape.
Come on!
Paddling towards waves that are like 3 or 4 feet higher than the prow of our boat.
Whoa! Yeah! That's what I'm talking about.
It was absolutely terrifying, but once we made it past, totally knew we had passed one of the worst hurdles we could, and the boat was going to be okay.
You want to talk about that episode?
That was from Duct Tape Island. We were escaping from a deserted island using only duct tape to survive, thrive, and eventually escape. And that was a 18-foot outrigger canoe that we built out of bamboo and duct tape in one day flat. And it absolutely survived the breakwaters. It was very seaworthy.
Yes.
Where did you come up with the idea to put a rocket on a surfboard?
But that just seems like something that everyone should try at some point.
I don't see them out in Ocean Beach too often with rockets. You know?
Yeah, well, a lot of times it's one of the joys of doing the show. Production Discovery found out a long time ago that if we're having fun, it makes for good TV. And so there's rarely anything that's off limits as long as it's something that we can do safely. So we take on things like, you know, I had an idea also to put square wheels on a truck to see what would happen. You know, it's not a myth. We sort of made it one, like the myth is that, if you drive fast enough on these square wheels, you'll get a smooth ride.
Which we found is actually the case, surprisingly.
And then the wheels and the brakes all fall off and you end up on the ground. But
all four brakes fell off in one shot.
Yeah.
Well, you used to do commercials. I know both of you worked in commercials. And what about brand names? For example, there used to be an urban legend, you probably know this, about pouring Coke on an automobile.
Yeah,
we tested that.
You did test
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
And what did you find?
The phosphoric acid worked along with aluminum foil to polish chrome on the bumpers.
It did really good at polishing chrome. It did not dissolve the paint of the car.
Yeah.
It also didn't dissolve a tooth. That whole thing, a Coca-Cola will dissolve a tooth in 24 hours, no, totally not the case.
Also, Coca-Cola is supposed to, they used to say, have some cocaine in it. Now, I don't know how you would prove that one way or the other. But what you run into problems, though? I mean, if you have a product like that,
we do,
you
absolutely
have to get all kinds of approval, don't you?
We had to call it Cola Myths. We have to be very careful about how we do that. We did, when we busted the fingerprint scanners, we actually, we went to great lengths to conceal the manufacturer of the fingerprint scanner, and even still they were very upset by our results in that we were able to foil a fingerprint scanner with a Xerox that we licked.
Yeah, it gets ridiculous from time to time, though. Like, we did something, I can't even remember what myth was, we did something with Twinkies and had to refer to them as cream-filled pastries, you know. And everybody knows what they are, you know, they're unmistakable.
And let's keep reminding people, don't necessarily try these experiments at home. We're out of time. I got so many suggestions for you guys. I'll give them to you before you leave. Thank you so much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure.
It's our pleasure. I'm so glad to be on the show.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to a special encore edition of Forum. Our guests were the stars of Mythbusters, Adam Savage and Jamie Heineman. Stay with us for another program from our archives this Thanksgiving, and happy Thanksgiving.